evening, fellow timekeepers, and welcome to our latest episode. I can't see you guys, but you can see me because we've decided to take the leap and do some YouTube and do some video, which is absolutely incredible. You can still get us on our audio feature on all good podcasting apps, but you know, we just thought, you know, the best way of showing all the watches that we love, whether it's you know, it's shots of the month, or watches we're lusting after, we'd venture into the world of YouTube. So be kind to us. You know, you can put comments on, give us inspiration, that kind of thing. But like I said, we're venturing into the world of visual. And last time out, we had like a bumper show with Charlie from Lion & Turnbull Auction House, talking about the online auction they're going to do later on in November. There's still time to register, and they've got lots of great things there. And Zach and I are going to be heading to the preview show later on in November. So like I said, you'll still be able to listen to exactly the same show you might be listening to it now with your headphones in on a good podcast channel. But like I said, you know, like, comment on YouTube. You know, we'd love to learn about what our listeners and our viewers like. I'm going to actually try and edit the older versions as well with some still visuals, so you get a way of you know, appreciating things we've done before. And one of the reasons why we're doing this is actually we're going to have a wonderful artist, sort of, you know, the watch industry, come and join us. Her name is Zee Wang. Some of you may already know her. She's a brilliant artist, like I said, from Australia, and she's created you know, these wonderful like watch drawings, sketches, and paintings. And we thought this can only be really done, you know, justice as a video cast or a podcast. So that's why we're making the leap, and we'll hopefully bring you more things. So I've talked for a little bit there, but I'm going to hand it over to Zach, because I believe we're talking to a very famous person now, courtesy of the New York Times. So how have you been, Zach? And tell the listeners and viewers more.
Yeah, definitely. Well, thank you for that intro. Famous, I wouldn't quite say so as of yet, but yeah, I had an amazing opportunity back in September to sit down with three other watch collectors who are under the age of 30 to join a round table in Soho, London. The event was hosted by Rachel Felder for her New York Times article to discuss various topics such as what kind of watch content, we're into, or where we shop for our new watches. We also kind of discussed the evolution of collecting in a digital age and how our passion for horology is driving the new generation of collectors. It was quite awesome to be a part of and to be able to contribute. I'd never done that before, but also hear everyone's individual opinions. For those looking for the article, you can find it on the New York Times paper that was issued last week, on the 7th of November in the watch section. Oh yeah, so next we'll be moving on to our sort of wrist checks. Today I have on my Rolex the Oyster Perpetual. It's quite nice to be able to show it in the camera this time. And what do you have on today, Tim?
Well, first of all, before I do that, you can see almost all my watch collection over here. So again, we've gone visual. So I've got this wonderful stand here with them, but I'm wearing the Omega Seamaster 300 that I bought this year that I absolutely love. But like I said, we've got all the watch collection there. You can see our wonderful timekeepers, beer mats as well. We've got the Panerai stuff as well. I've got all the Cartiers up there when we do our bit of a deep dive later on. So Zach, I'm waiting to see what stand you're going to get as well for later episodes. But yeah. Rocking the Seamaster 300 at the moment today.
Awesome choice.
Cool. So we talked about Seiko last time, didn't we, Zach? Grand, yep. Seiko. But we never actually got to go to the store before we recorded. Our diaries didn't really align. But, you know, undeterred, we made it to the flagship store. And I wanted to catch a glimpse of that one watch I mentioned a lot, that autumn red dial. And it was I'm going to have to look at my notes because, you know, you have to do it word for word. And it's the morning glow of the Hatoika Peaks. But sadly, it wasn't in. But it will be back. We had to move quickly because there's only 200 pieces in Europe, and 100 of those are reserved for the UK. But I can't wait to pop in and actually see it in person. Also, there were some that, you know, I didn't really look at it in my desk research, but they really popped when we went in store. And one was a pale blue dial, wasn't it, Zach? And it was called the Kishun, and it was the first days of summer. And again, they've got great wordsmiths in Japan. Makes you want to pick up Ghost of Tsushima on the PS5. You know, people know me. I'm a big gamer. And just bash out a haiku, you know, sort of very tranquil. Bit of fighting as well, of course. But yeah, they're great wordsmiths, aren't they? But, you know, the rest of the dial is very simple. You know, there was no sort of date windows to spoil the view. Neat silver hands, a good price point too. And for those who do like references, it is the SBGW 283. Again, there was another watch we couldn't try because it was in the shop window, but it had this incredible purple dial, didn't it? And the Grand Seiko called this the Boishu. The quote they use again is when the beauty of the autumn is at its height and when the winter is around the corner. You have to really see it in the flesh to truly appreciate it. Again, good price point, all things considered. And again, reference SBGW 287, I believe. And I think we talked before in the last podcast, we sort of joked that, you know, these seasonal themes, it sort of means you have to buy four of them to cover yourself off. You know, this watch here, the Omega, it's a summer watch, so that's one. And you've got to buy another one, that's two. But Grand Seiko sort of compels you to buy four, one for each season. So good marketing by Grand Seiko. Is that, what were your first impressions when you went into the store? And what watches did you actually like? I think it's a green one that you spotted that caught your eye as well.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And then you mentioned about the four seasons and having to buy all four. That that could be quite expensive. I hadn't actually visited the Grand Seiko boutique, particularly on Bond Street. So when Tim, you suggested visiting, I couldn't pass up the offer. We were greeted by a friendly Grand Seiko team, and were passed on to Sam, one of the sales assistants, I believe, who was very gracious and pleasant, invited us to look at most of the watches and allowed us to try on different Grand Seiko models. There were two watches that stood out to me. First, it was the green dial, Sakura Wakaba, I believe, probably butchered that. 62GS high beat, reference SGBH343. There was something quite hypnotic about the dial. I found it so compelling, and at the time, wearing a green jumper, it just went so well. At 38mm as well, the watch sat perfectly on my wrist, which just added to its charm for me also. So that was my first favorite watch. The second, I would say, my second favorite watch of that evening was Grand Seiko's Quartz Gecko Night Sky, reference SBGX349. A piece inspired by the inky darkness of the night sky. This piece was super elegant and shared the same case size as my Rolex Whisper Petrol, sitting at 34mm. The silver hour markers contrasted the dark blue dial so well, and the silver polished case just added to the watch's ultra refined look for me. I'm a big fan of crocodile straps, and this watch had a crocodile strap in navy. And I feel like that did an awesome job in tying all the great elements together of that watch. Unlike other watch we mentioned, this particular model has a quartz movement, which is reflected in the significantly lower price tag, which I believe was around just above 3,000. I feel like it's a stunning option, and those are my two favorite.
Yeah, that sounds really good. Again, I wasn't really taken by Grand Seiko sort of historically, but I might have to add one. But then, you know, I do really like the Reverso. I do really like a Panerai. So I think there's an orderly queue forming, isn't there?
One day.
No, thanks for that, Zach. And also, just to update you on our travels, I was able to have a great event at Breitling the other week. It was with the Watch Collectors Club. Again, you know, we've had Hamish and Ed on before, and obviously they had their great event up in Manchester at the weekend too. Zach and I unfortunately couldn't make that, but I'm sure lots of listeners did. It was an excellent and packed atmosphere, really chilled out vibe for, the boutique, and I'd really highly recommend it. There was talk about 140 years of Breitling. It was really good for them to celebrate that. No mention of Universal Genève, though. I know there's been a few adverts online on social media about it, sort of sneak peeking, but I can't wait for them to bring that brand back. No Pistachio dial, unfortunately. The Breitling Premier, it wasn't in store. Hopefully they haven't discontinued it. That'd be a crying shame. But I did get to try the Premier with the moon face, because I've got to love a good moon face, haven't I? I do prefer the vintage models, so they did have some in store, obviously not to try on, but to see as part of that, 140-year heritage. And as I left, there was great merch. I've got some of it here. So And people can see that it's 140 years of firsts, and I didn't know what this was at first, but I think it's a bookmark. So I'm using that if I ever get the chance to read anything. Also, with two kids, I listen to podcasts, but you can't really read anything because you've got to make sure they don't do anything stupid like kill themselves. So it's staying there, and it will look pretty and nice like all the other watches. And they did also some great collaborations with Deus Ex, you know, the sort of sport, extreme sport brand, surfing, that kind of thing, motorcycles. And they had some really good hoodies in there. So although, you know, not a lot of money to buy a hoodie, it was quite expensive for what it was. But I might see myself popping back in to get a hoodie and not a Breitling, because that would be quite dangerous. Zach, should we watches were lusting either. Who wants to go first? Do you want to do it first or shall I?
I'll let you go ahead. Go ahead with that.
Okay, cool. So can I have two? I think you've got two as well. We normally only, we're quite like, we can only have one, but it was a bit of a toss up for me. So one thing we sort of mentioned in passing in another episode was that, Zach, you like the Zenith El Primero. I'm not the biggest fan of Zenith, but I saw a half black and half white dial. So I'm just going to get my phone out. I think you should do the same.
Yeah.
We'll put it up for viewers to see on screen, but it's literally cut at an angle, half black, half white. I thought it was photoshopped. I thought it was a fake. AI had done something crazy, but we were wrong. It's actually called the Lupin the Third Final Edition. Bit of a mouthful, and it at least it's not a long-winded reference that we've just said earlier. And despite not being a bracelet guy at all, it's got a wonderful ladder style bracelet. Again, haven't seen this before, which I think is a really neat touch. Looking past the breaking of the symmetry with its pesky date window between the 4 and the 5, like I can just about get past that. It's got different fonted subdials, which I think is really cool too. And I suppose, you know, if you cast your mind further back, it's almost like the perfect watch for the band The Hives, because I do like my rock music, with their black and white suits on front of their album covers and gigs. And they've even got a song, haven't they? Tick, Tick, Boom. So it does actually link to watch it. It's a very bad pun there, but I love The Hives, and I do love this Zenith. So there you go. And then the other one I really liked was not something I'd even really consider in the past. And we'll flash it up on screen in a sec. And it's the Hermes Quantiem Perpetual Calendar in 18 karat rose gold. Just having a look at our phones here. You know, hear me out. I know Hermes isn't like, you know, a huge watch brand. It does so many other things, fashion, jewelry, et cetera, et cetera. But it's got geometry with the 4 subdials, symmetry, so big tick. It's got the moon phase, big tick. Clean and crisp white dial against the rose gold, big tick. It's got some quirky and unique numerals, and they've got sort of small gaps in them, like dashes, like a Morse code. And it's not just on the main dial configuration. It's actually in the smaller subdials and the date subdial too. And I think that's super cool. So it's another big tick for me. And its lugs are really funky. If you sort of look at them at sort of an angle, they're almost like traditional like tap basins like you get in an old like Victorian style bathroom. And then they've got this wonderful lead leather strap at the top. I mean, it's completely random watch, but I really, really like it. I mean, Zach, have I got a bit crazy with the Hermes there? And what ones were your favorite this month that you're lusting over?
Certainly not. So first off, that Zenith El Primero, like you mentioned, I'm a huge fan of them. And like you mentioned, when I first saw this, I definitely thought it was edited. But it's really cool to kind of see like an inverted, almost color dial. So kind of 2 colors going on. Really cool. And then also the Hermes. I haven't really looked into Hermes watches per se, but when you did send this over, I was really shocked at how great it actually looks. I'm a big fan of red croc straps or outrageous color straps. Of course, in gold cases, nice touch, rose gold. And then also what kind of stood out to me is kind of like the funky style numerals, which was kind of different to me. So quite refreshing to see. So great choices there. For me, I have 2 also. The first watch being a vintage Omega Constellation, reference 2852. This is the Paipan Constellation, nicknamed the Shark Tooth. This featured on Marcel Watch Group on Instagram, and the watch features a gold case, brown leather strap, Also, the sides of the watch was actually silver, which added slightly, creating, I feel like, a bit of a different character to the watch. Omega's always been my favorite brand, as they have so much to offer, old and new. But I lean more towards the vintage. That's good. You're also a fan of Omega. Yeah, I feel like they do such a good job with the old and new. And I lean more towards the vintage. And I think perhaps you're probably the same too. That's one clear example of an Omega watch I like. The second choice this month is a brand that perhaps I haven't mentioned or we haven't mentioned on the podcast before, and that's Tissot. So this model being one of their divers named the Navigator, also the Skin Diver, it's also known as, from the 60s, on the black leather strap. The watch features a square patina hour markers and an iconic orange luminous third hand that I believe adds like quite a lot of flair to watches. I always love a third hand that's like lime green or orange or red, really adds to the watch. It's sporty yet vintage, and the look of it definitely drew me in. This model was a part of a growing trend back then in the 60s of professional and recreational dive watches. And the design is classic and fits the sort of vintage-esque or aesthetic that everyone's kind of after.
Cool. Yeah, I obviously blotted in there about Omega. Love the brand. They're probably my favorite brand ever. And my favorite probably vintage watch ever is one that I am lusting over big time. And it is a Piper Constellation, but with the arrow head hands. I let one go maybe a year ago now, and I shouldn't have done. A little bit wrong with it in my mind.
Yeah,
and I stepped away, and I shouldn't have done. It's a bit like that vintage Rolex bubble back that I saw. I think it was from the same chap. The price was just incredible, and I should have just got it. But one day I'll get that dream watch with the pipe hands. That's incredible. And Tissot as well. I'm not the biggest fan, but I think that watch is quite impressive. I know they've got some sort of modern watches as well that are really, really good. So good choice if you ask. We pivot to Insta shots of the month. So we've had a few reels and shots of skateboards, haven't we? Which I personally absolutely loved. And there was a recent shot in the desert. But this time I was really struggling to get my phone out again so we could sort of talk through it. But it was incredible. I was really struck by it. It's Scarlett in the Shire's needlework on her jacket. She actually stitched, or she got someone to stitch for her, Cartier tank. I just think it's amazing. Really good idea. I haven't seen it anywhere else. So clever to stitch it, watch designs onto clothing. Bravo, is what I say. And I think there's a watch merch cornering the market to be had there. So we talked about Deus Ex and Breitling hoodies, but actually stitching on the Cartier tank as an image with the cabochon in blue as well. It's very impressive. And next up is actually collaboration. And it's great to see in the watch community two people coming together, two photographers. They produce standalone, like really quality images, but it was such a good blend of styles. And it's none other than Three Hand Picks, who we've actually mentioned on and highlighted on the pod before, as well as Heavy in Time. You'll see the full set, like it will flash up on screen. But there was one where they're both sort of dangling the watches off their fingers, straight at the camera, and it's black and white. And it just really highlights sort of the depth of the background and the lighting. The watches themselves are very different. There's I believe it's a Rolex Yachtmaster and a Baltic. I personally like the mix of the masculine and feminine hands as well. So it's not just about the watches. It's a really neat juxtaposition. Lot of play going on there, almost like they're dancing. And as I said, very, very impressive. And then finally from me, it's a new hashtag for this month, and it's Watches and Pastries Week, which I can really get into. And it takes place from the 18th of November. So hopefully the pod version of this will be out. Don't know if I get the editing done in time for the video, but get ready. And I'm obsessed with Great British Bake Off. I'm still one behind, I think, so I've got to catch up. So no one tell me on the comments who's gone out. But this one is a teaser from the gentleman that's running it, Coffees and Calipers. And this image is sort of slightly offset of the Omega Seamaster, but it's got some fun photography in terms of like arcing sort of circular lines of a marble table with a black textured background. And there's more circular lines of the coffee cup and plate, replete with obviously coffee. And I think it's an almond pastry. So we've got great eye for composition there. And I think that's really hard to beat. So out of those three, which one do you like? And which one deserves our beer mat, Zach? And also, what Insta shots have you got for us this month?
Now, you always pick the best ones. It's kind of unfair. But yeah, these are the amazing shots. First of all, I love that the picture of, I think it's Scarlin the Sheer. And her kind of like sewn in Cartier jacket. I think it's totally amazing. I think I'd definitely be lining.
Yeah,
that would be cool. I never even knew this kind of existed. So that would be awesome to have that on the jumper for sure. And like that
it's
kind of
person.
100%, 100%. So I'll definitely be looking out.
If you get the Oris Bear, I'm sure you can get like a Cartier tank, like stitched somewhere. Yeah, it'd be great.
That's true. We've got to get our demands in. But that was a crazy, crazy shot. So it was an awesome one to share. Even that little cabochon is amazing. So well done to her. Also, your second photo of the black and white, it was really cool to see the masculine and feminine, as you said. But then also, I'd say it was really cool to see Rolex, the big brand, paired with Baltic, which is of course a much smaller brand. Just kind of two complete different watches, but kind of in unison in one photo. So it's quite nice to see that. And then, of course, the last photo of the pastry was just amazing. It's kind of making me feel a little bit hungry. I haven't really had an almond croissant in a while. But yeah, amazing. And I wasn't too aware of that pastry and watch week. So I'll be looking forward to be joining along. It's kind of hard to pick between the three.
Exactly. And you were in Paris, weren't you, a few months ago? And I'm going to go at the end of the month and I'm going to go to a few watch shops if my wife will let me. So I'm going to have some pastries and some watch shops.
Definitely. And definitely.
Them together. So
if
you had to pick out of the three, what do you like before you move on to yours?
I would have to pick the second shot, black and white, just captured so well. Kind of like male hand, female hand, difference in the watches, just very creative the way they kind of like hung down in the photo and captured. And then the black and white, I feel like black and white photos always have a more of a dramatic effect. So I'd have to say that one. I'd say that one personally.
Cool. Cool. What about yours? What have you got for us?
Yeah, so for mine, I believe I only have one, so not as many as you this week. For me, the InstaShot of the week goes to Tim Vaughan, which I believe is a watch writer for various different magazines and papers. He captured the most expensive FP Jaune. I'm not sure if anyone's kind of seen that. Probably most people in the watch community, which was sold at Phillips recently for a staggering $8.3 million. The opening bid for the watch was $2.3 million, which is just mind-blowing and insane. But back to the shot. The shot captures the incredible details of the watch. You can kind of see the open face with all kind of like the balance wheel and different movements and mechanisms within the watch. Truly extraordinary. So I believe that would have to be my watch shot of the month.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like the watch inside out, isn't it? I'm just looking at it now when you said
inverted.
It's almost like someone's pulled out the inside and left it on the front there. It's amazing. Really remarkable. I think it's probably, I like aesthetics and beauty, as we've said before. I suppose this is more for like the engineer
mechanical
mind, isn't it? Because it's all there, and that's beauty in and of itself as well, like, you know, a working mechanism. But I suppose it speaks to why different types of people like watches.
100%. So,
I think I'd rather have a Cartier crash, and we'll get onto that later. But a little bit cheaper, but not that much.
Not far off.
go brand deep dive, and I've kept it back on purpose because I love them so much. I adore Cartier as a watch brand, and I've been really fortunate to acquire two models. So I'm actually going to stand up and get them. So a bit of movement here on the pod. So we can talk about those and share them in a minute. Where to begin? I love the jeweled cabochon, which is often on many of Cartier's ranges. We've talked in previous pods how they should add more colour. We all know that there's the blue one. I think it's rare to see a red cabochon, even rarer to see a green one. That would be something I'd love to get. All the different colours like that. Cartier, if you're listening, you're probably not, but do it. All different colours, it'll be great. And also, it's simply the design thinking that goes into the watch brands, especially the case shapes. They're second to none, and they're not a conservative brand. How many conservative brands are there in the watch world? Just, you need to push things out there. And aesthetically, for me, it's unparalleled. So, should we talk about the tank? It's the most famous one. Not to get it over and done with, but you can't start talking about Cartier Kelly without talking about the tank. It's an icon for both men and women. Comes in numerous forms, and we're going to talk about the most common one, I guess, which is the must range. Listeners know I've got one from the 1980s here. There we go, beautiful piece. Again, we'll flash it up on the images I took previously as well, so you can see it really up close. It's got this gorgeous radial dial. It's really an elongated numerals. It's really elegant. I guess it probably gets the most positive remarks. And put them when I'm out talking to people, and it's probably my favorite vintage watch in my collection as well. Just it's incredible. It's really, really good. And also Cartier, its name, the name Cartier, is sort of semi hidden at the 7 o'clock position on a lot of watches, and particularly on the tank. So I think it's a really neat touch. Even better when they mix it up and put it in the 10 clock position as well, which they've got on some of them. And again, the blue steel hands is a nod to vintage, which, yeah, obviously I adore. They've got other sort of more modern must ranges, as well as ones a couple of decades back as well, with sort of flat block colored dials. There's a burgundy red, there's like a jet black, some examples there, and they're probably my favorite picks. Very partial to the lapis blue dial they did. We obviously have got the lapis in the new Baltic, and there's even a wood version, which I think is quite quirky. And for me, every watch collector has got to have one at some point, or keep indefinitely. Which is your favorite tank must? Let's know in the comments on YouTube. Then you've got some less sort of common tanks, which I'm just going to reel off here. We won't spend too much time with them, and I want to bring Zach in as well. You've got the American, which is like more stretched, sort of oblong, and it's sort of like got a blunted cabochon, and it's akin to almost like a nut and a bolt, so it's less sort of pointy. Then you've got the Francais, which is more of like a squat design, and it's sort of brushed steel case, which I really like, and on the bracelet, which is certainly different, harder to scratch and that kind of thing. And the cabochon is more rounded on this one. Not the biggest fan, but again, I'm sure someone's got one. Then there's an older model, the London. It's more of a square dial. Again, we'll flash it up on screen, but it's got this like parallel case lines to create almost like a ladder effect. So it's almost like that. Again, you don't see many of those out and about. I mean, what does the tank do for you, Zach? Have you owned one in the past? They're a great iconic brand. You must have had one or would like to have one.
Totally. First off, let's see the one that I think I missed it. Let's see the one you have, your Cartier tank. Did you flash your Cartier tank? Yeah. Wow. It's not gonna start on the screen, I see that elongated numerals.
It's a photo that I've taken.
Yeah. Before. That's a beautiful watch. I'm a big fan of Cartier tanks. I actually purchased a Cartier tank, Mustang Cartier. I think it was back in lockdown when I was looking for things to keep me entertained whilst we're trapped inside. For like everyone, it's a bit of a nightmare.
Watching
but
the time go by, yeah.
Yeah, literally, curfews and everything. So I was scrolling through eBay and I came across a gold tank Mustay on a cherry red leather strap, and I love different color straps. The combination with the blue cabochon, and I know that Tim loves cabochons, with the blue cabochon, red strap, and gold plate case completely drew me in. The model wasn't running, but I thought it would be a cool piece to purchase and then also to document the restoration process on Source Watches, which is my Instagram, during the COVID time. I ended up taking it to Russell Tourlemans in Mayfair, which most will know, most people who are into watches will know, or on this podcast may know, to fix the necessary parts of the watch until it was back to its full health. I also got a chance to document each stage of the kind of restoration process, including videos and reels, which was an awesome kind of thing to keep me busy during these COVID times. I do miss it. It had a great character when sat on the wrist, but unfortunately no longer have it.
Oh, you shouldn't have partied with it, my friend. Shouldn't have partied with it. You'll have to find another one, won't you? And yes. After the podcast, you probably will want another one.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Wonderful. So next one, we're going to talk about the Santos Dumont, both the new and the old. You know, another range that I'm really partial to is this Santos Dumont. But for me, only really in the vintage form. We don't talk about hate on this podcast, but what I really dislike is what they've done to it in modern times. It looks like a completely different watch. You know, the vintage version looks much more industrial, almost like a work of art deco. You know, it stands out in all gold. And then you've got the square inside casing that's sitting on top of a more sort of rounded case. Again, it's almost like they've drilled screws into it or rivets to make it more almost like an old steamship or cruise ship. You know, they maintain the square dial with the Roman numerals, which is quite a theme of Cartier, and they've got the blue steel hands, which again I love. They've got a platinum version, which I think is pretty nice too, but the gold pops an awful lot more. I think there's an ultra thin version, which I'm actually the one I love the most, and it really does take my breath away. And it's got these incredible shapely lugs, and one day it'll be mine, so I'll have to save up, but I would love one. But again, I've got two Cartiers here, so might have to part with one to get that one, but there you go. But the modern variant, you don't really mind it, do you, Zach? But for me, I think they've ruined it. They've squashed it. I think they've done it with like a rolling pin, including the numerals, and they've given it a shiny silver dial. Like, why make it shiny? I'm not liking its vibe, but hopefully they'll see sense and create a new Santos, a new version of the old Santos Dumont to its natural state soon. But what does the Santos Dumont do for you, Zach? Do you like it as well?
Yeah, I remember speaking to you about this. I think we saw some Santos Dumonts when we visited Watches Switzerland in Regent Street.
Yeah.
Like you, Tim, I'm also a fan of vintage Santos Dumonts, and got to try on a solid gold one in the 1980s version. This piece had a red leather strap, and it was actually part of a auction preview for Watches of Knightsbridge Auction House. They were very kind there, and I looked through a bunch of watches, and this was one of them. The event was held at the Londoner Hotel, which I believe was last year. It totally made me fall in love with the vintage version. So I'd probably say I swayed towards that more so. The newer Santos Dumont, I can't say is my favorite due to some of the reasons you've kind of mentioned, Tim. Nonetheless, I do think, although they have lost a little charm that they had with the vintage variants, harbored, I do see how Cartier did kind of attempt to modernize things with the Dumont, and whilst trying to retain the same design language that is loved by many and popularized by the original Dumont. Ultimately, I would say I'd go more towards the vintage like you, Tim, but the newer versions are priced quite fairly and still don't look bad.
Yeah, they are. The old ones, particularly the ultra thin, very expensive, but the more modern ones, which I do not like, are actually cheaper. But there you go. One day. So we'll move on to a lesser known piece, but it caught my eye about 18 months ago, and I had to have it, and that is the ceinture, which I probably butchered, which is French for belt buckle. So I'm just putting it on screen there, and we'll put like a really good photography image of it up for YouTube. It was from the 1970s, and that was its heyday. It's got this incredible, as we can see here, octagonal shape. It can only be described as having the corners cut or clipped off. It is like a belt buckle. If you turn it that way and look at it, you know, you could wear that as a belt, couldn't you? Maybe that's another bit of merch. You've got the stitching of a tank, you know, on your socks, and then you could have an actual belt buckle cincture. So there we go. It's almost stacked, like one case on top of each other, sort of giving it a sense of depth, which not all watches have. The Cabochon has been departed with. It is gone, fini. But they've actually put the crown sort of sandwiched between the two cases. Again, I'll flash it up on screen. And it's got an octagonal flat shape to go along the case itself. I think Cartier should actually bring it back. You know, their back catalogue is incredible. You know, it's without equal. If they made a modern version of this, I would definitely purchase it, and perhaps a slightly bigger version as well. Zach, what do you think about the Cartier Cincture, the one that I've got here?
Yeah, definitely. I think a completely beautiful, beautiful watch. But before I go on to the Cincture and what I kind of think about it, I did forget to add something as part of the Santos section that we kind of spoke about previously. Yeah, let's go back. So not a Dumont, but back in 2021, I purchased a 1998 Cartier Santos full set. Mm-hmm. I believe the reference was a 1564. It was almost a birth year, but not quite, because I was born in 96 and it was a 98 version. It's incredible watch. Displayed the Cartier's classic square shape, as you kind of mentioned previously, which was very easily recognizable by others. It also had a metallic matte finish bracelet, which I loved and was easily kind of recognized by those who don't know the brand and who do know the brand. I loved the kind of the polished bezel, metallic bezel, that kind of contrasted well with the matte bracelet. I wore it with joy, but then, like most watch enthusiasts, unfortunately, I was proposed an offer which I couldn't refuse, as many of us know, and ended up selling the watch on, unfortunately, and do kind of regret it. But I guess that's kind of how it goes. But back to my thoughts on the Cincture and what you've kind of mentioned, I kind of feel this is another example of Cartier hitting the nail on the head when it comes to design. I feel like the Cincture is an extremely good-looking watch and captures all the elements that made the 1970s a great time for design.
Well, I do prefer my other tank that I've got, though, the Vermeil. Like I said, I get more comments on it, but both very beautiful watches. We'll move on to a watch that I think, Zach, you've mentioned before as well. And I quite like it too. I think it's good for watch shots. And that is a rather jazzy number. And that is the Basculante. So it's very hard to describe over a podcast. So it's great that we're now videocast. Unless you didn't know the model already. So you basically can flip and rotate the case in all sorts of angles and lines and shapes. And I believe it's called a cabriolet system, a bit like a convertible car on a hood, sort of closing and opening. It's great for watch shots on Instagram, like I just mentioned. Gone is the Cabochon, a bit of a shame because I do love them. But the jewel still remains on the face, like an all-seeing eye. It's very odd, but I do quite like it. It's often blue, but I've seen red versions as well. And there's one particular one that I really do like, and it's got blue dial. And it's complete with five stars of the Australian flag celebrating 100 years of the Australian Federation. So someone that loves Australia, who's got family in Australia, that's quite a cool model. I don't know how many they did in terms of special edition, but if I was have to have one, I think it would be that. But Zach, if I recall correctly, you did pick out a Basculante for a previous watch shot of the month. So what do you specifically like about them?
Yes, and well remembered. The Basculante is almost an enhanced version of the tank, I kind of believe, a watch that I also love. Its extra level of complexity really intrigues me, and I can imagine it would be quite a nice conversation starter, maybe at watch events, maybe at a watch collecting event. I love the small details, such as the integrated crown. All its little details make it such unique and an interesting piece to have as part of your collection. So yeah, I'd love to have one as part of the collection. And I love the kind of cabriolet system that you've mentioned that really enhances the piece.
They've got quite pricey. I don't like doing numbers on this podcast, like references. If people want to know how much they are, they can go online and have a look. It's not about showing off about XYZ numbers or whatever, 1, 2, 3 numbers, it were. But they've got a lot out of people's price range, unfortunately. You think because they're quite quirky. And they're not that many of them. Maybe the prices stay low. But again, free market economics, there's supply and demand, it's gone up. There you go. So another watch that I actually quite like, but I'm going to touch on it, and it's called the Vendome. It's very traditional. No rectangles, no crazy shapes or twists or turns. It's a simple circle, but an elegant Cartier circle at that. It's got like an inner full circle and then sort of two, and it's separated by two sort of semicircles that encase the leather strap, almost acting like lugs themselves. Very hard to explain, again, on the podcast. Look at the picture on the video cards. The Cabochon is back in all its blue glory too, which again, big tick for me. But on the whole, this Cartier watch could be seen as feminine or more feminine, given its size and styling cues. Maybe it would suit more of a woman's wrist. If my wife was into watches, which she's not, she absolutely hates them. She said, never buy me a watch. So, but I would, if I was pushed, consider the Vendome for her. I think she could pull it off very well. But if I did, she'd probably kill me and I wouldn't be here anymore. So I will just spend watches on myself. So that's absolutely fine with me. Zach, do you like it?
Yeah, no more money spent on watches. That's a hard one, isn't it? Exactly. We all get it, don't we, Tim? Exactly. I do agree with that sentiment. This model does seem to appear a bit more feminine compared to the other Cartier models we've previously mentioned and that are out there. Maybe it's due to the plethora, I feel like, of curves used when it comes to their design rather than Cartier's more popular and familiar square and angular kind of design language. I'm someone who doesn't really like to define a watch as masculine or feminine usually, but I do believe it's more subjective, and watches should be put into shouldn't be put into brackets in this context. I feel like people should be able to enjoy whatever they want and wear whatever they want, of course. And that's the one beautiful thing about watches, actually. I feel like one good example of this is the Cartier's Panthère. I've often mentioned this, a watch that's kind of perceived as a lady's watch, but there's actually a photo of Keith Richards from the Rolling Stones actually wearing one. There's multiple photos, which is something that can definitely help to change someone's opinion and then also at least make them more open-minded to watch what watches can be worn and what is considered feminine or not feminine. So yeah, he definitely popularized that and changed my opinion with that, because I also thought that the Panthère was definitely a lady's watch, but he definitely made it look cool. Anyway, back to the Vendome, because I've kind of digressed. I am a fan, but it wouldn't fall within the top three or top five of my favorite Cartier models, if I'm being honest with you.
Yeah, well, I mean, you said Keith Richards. I mean, you know, he's probably got more masculinity than like 10 men in a room. You know,
totally.
I guess, you know, you can pull off lots of things.
He can get away with it. You know, yeah. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe exactly. he can pull it off and many can't.
He can rock it.
Yeah.
So we're getting into the end of the podcast now. We've saved a few for last. So money, no object, sophisticated and discerning, bold and striking. The gentleman's choice. No, not a pointless and soulless Daytona. Sorry, Rolex, but it is the Cartier crash. What could be said? It's almost like Salvatore Dali's, you know, persistence of memory with a hint of Scream by Edvard Munch. Its case shape is certainly a work of surrealism. It tries to defy physics. It's not how any sane person would design a watch. in order to deliver its function, i.e. tell the time. It's contorted, it's crumpled, it's misshapen. It's something that cannot be molded. It's got a staggering beauty. The numerals aren't in shape. It's like plunging into an alternate dimension or reality or a wormhole, interstellar style. The only normal thing about it is the cabochon. The cabochon is back amongst all that chaos. They often sell, I am going to say the price, because very few people can buy them, 200K. Who is 200K to spend on a watch? But some even sell for £1 million.
Wow. So
bonkers. Is it that justifiable? I mean, it is slightly bonkers, right? But there is a uniqueness. And I know we do say uniqueness a lot, especially in modern times, but other watch brands can't match this. It is unique. Maybe we can dream of a crash / swatch medley, so it costs £200, or quartz version, so it costs £1,000. Not mere mortals. I mean, obviously I'm kidding, because who'd want a quartz crash or a crash swatch medley? But, you know, I've even got the you know, I've even got the joyous Omega Swatch, Moon Swatch there. So, you know, people buy it, don't they? But I mean, Zach, what do you think about it?
Yeah, you kind of briefly mentioned the Omega Moon Swatch. I'm still trying to get my hands on one. Amazing watch. And yeah, you kind of joked about a crash swatch with a quartz movement. You were kidding, but I definitely would look into that if there was one sort of available. But yeah, the price range is insane for the crash. But I do believe the crash design is genius. You've kind of mentioned. Some say it's rumored to be derived from a Cartier that was involved in a car accident. I don't know if it's true or not. But that just adds to the...
We'll run over these watches.
That's it. Maybe we need to do that. Get a discounted version.
But you first. Sure, you first.
Oh, that's a tricky one to explain to insurance. Exactly. Yeah. There's been many versions over the years. Some with diamonds, different precious metals, and limited editions, all of which have been sought after by many collectors. Its unique design has attracted loads of celebrities also, which has kind of been interesting. Celebrities in the limelight, such as Kanye West, Jay-Z, Tyler, the Creator, Kim Kardashian. Up until most recently, Kai Cenat, who probably most won't know, as he's a most of our generation.
No idea.
Yeah. Well, he's like...
you might know. Born in 96. To be
honest, I'm like the last year millennial, so I'm kind of like the last catching on to that kind of group. But after me, so anyone who's born post 96, 97 on upwards, so the Gen Z generation will know him. So he's a Gen Z streamer, I believe, who started on Twitch, who's absolutely blowing up all over the net. And he recently posted a Cartier crash whilst in Paris. I believe his one has diamonds on it, which is totally interesting, right? A watch that's kind of started many years before he was born, and to see young people get involved in it is definitely interesting. I definitely feel like these influences have definitely created a resurgence of interest into the crash, which definitely adds probably to the crazy price tag, which you've kind of mentioned, Tim. So yeah, the prices are far from normal, but put that aside, I do think it's an extraordinary watch and would be a mega dream to have one, but I don't know if that will happen anytime soon, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think for that price, I'd rather have a Porsche 911 or a nice house somewhere abroad than your watch. But there you
true.
Go.
You can't drive a watch.
The watches we buy.
Yeah.
But there you go. I want to see one in the flesh, actually. I mean, I don't know anyone that owns one, but and I think in the Cartier store in London, I don't think I've seen one, but it'd be lovely, even just to try it on, even if there's like 10 security guards around you, it'd just be great to try it on and just say that you wore it once on this earth and in this life. So there you go. So the final one is, well, like the other 8 billion people in this world that can't afford a crash, how about something a tad cheaper? And we're leaping from art and we're going into geometry and maths, and that is the Cartier Asymmetrique. So, you know, my high school maths brain would say it was a parallelogram. But in fact, I was doing a bit of research late last night. It's actually defined as a rhomboid case shape. So what's the difference between a rhomboid and a parallelogram? I don't know, but it's a shape. And it looks nice. Now, for someone that prattles ad nauseum about the love of symmetry, how can I love something that is not actually symmetrical? Well, love isn't meant to be rational, is it? You fall in love with who you fall in love with. And that's what I'm going to say in my defense. I mean, I like the trick it plays with your eyes and your mind. It's like a wonky picture frame. Tilt it one way, don't like it. Tilt it another, don't like it. And then you get it to the point that you want. And like I said, that's the beauty of it. Maybe it's art after all. Again, doing more research on different types of art. It's Kandinsky with his abstract shapes, perhaps. So, you know, we've moved on to different artists, and that's great that Cartier tapped into all of that. Gone are the Roman numerals all the way across. They've gone 12, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10 combination, which I do quite like because, you know, not many watches have that. And the cabochon remains, again, intact. So yay for that. And you can get it for a fifth of the price of a crash. So we said 200K, so it's a fifth of 200K. Still out the hands, or should I say off the wrists of mere mortals. Bad pun, but it's true. I'd love to have one, but I'm not spending that much on a watch. That is crazy. But yeah, beautiful. I mean, Zach, what do you make of the asymmetric?
Yeah, it's interesting. It's nice to see the mention of cabochons throughout. So that's good that it's still
for the win.
Yeah, it's in. In terms of this watch, you said a fifth of the price of a Crash, but that's still like way over my budget, which is quite sad, but is the case. But I love the unique dial layout. It's rotated 30 degrees, as you kind of mentioned, with the 12 and 6 o'clock markers positioned on opposite corners, rather than top and bottom. I had it down as a parallelogram, but yeah, I've been kind of educated. It's actually a rhomboid.
Or a rhomboid.
And that kind of, definitely breaks the traditional watch shapes, which is quite interesting to me, and adds an element of like an avant-garde style, which is also cool, quite cool to have. Due to its kind of unorthodox design and limited production, I know that the Tank asymmetric is highly collectible and sought after by many enthusiasts. So if you do have one, that's a pretty special moment, or special thing for you. The asymmetric by Cartier is a testament, I believe, to Cartier's creativity and willingness to step out of the box and push boundaries when it comes to their watch design. It's always quite interesting when, quite entertaining actually, when brands such as Cartier, who've been around for a while, continue to kind of push those boundaries or try new things, because we can often be staying stagnated within the watch industry with loads of models being quite similar. So it's quite cool to see that happening with the asymmetric. I do believe it's an iconic watch within horology, and another great piece from Cartier.
Definitely, again, a bit like the Crash. I'd love to see it in the flesh. Again, maybe there's 6 security guards and not 10 around you, but I'd like to try it on at least once in my life. So there we go.
Yeah.
But I think, Zach, you're doing the outro for us, and yes, call this cool. We picked what deep dive we're going to do as well. So I'll let you take it away and give us a good close.
Sure. So that's quite a bumper show as a duo. We hope you liked our first foray into video. It's been interesting. Do drop us your favorable comments. We're all about the love of watches, not hating or chasing clicks or being controversial. As we've mentioned, we'll be trying this out again for another interview. Next time we'll have Z, and her incredible works of watch art. I have seen some of her pieces, completely amazing. And we'll have them on video to better appreciate the drawings. By then, we've visited our previous for Lion and Turnbull's online watch auction, so we can feedback on the lots we saw, and I'm sure there'll be incredible things coming up. Our watch brand to deep dive in will be Patek Philippe, so stay tuned for that. A lot of interesting things around that coming up. And follow us on the Timekeepers 2024 on Instagram. Tell your watch fam. Check out Tim's Insta page on watch_word_, and me at sourced_watches. And give that New York Times article a read too, if you do have a chance. So November the 7th, it came out. Have a look at that. It's quite an interesting roundtable conversation. And thank you again for keeping time with us. Until next time, it's goodbye from Tim and goodbye from me. Goodbye.